Good morning. My name is Julie Orta. I work for the Centers for Disease Control, supporting the Vaccine Management Business Improvement Project. I'd like to introduce our speakers, but first our disclaimer. CDC, our planners, and the presenters in this session wish to disclose they have no financial interests or other relationships with the manufacturers of commercial products, suppliers of commercial services, or commercial supporters. The purpose of today's session is to share with you where we stand with the VTRAX provider order pilot, giving CDC and grantee perspectives, which is why you see CDC folks as well as your peers from the field up here on the stage. So we want this to be a very open discussion and share with you what has happened to date and what we've learned and what happens next. So Brad Prescott, who is the lead on the program side of the house, on the VTRAX provider order pilot, otherwise known as VPOP. He will give a brief overview of what VPOP is, provide some data on what we have found in the implementation and evaluation, share lessons learned, and then help transition. What do we do about it? VPOP isn't a standalone siloed effort. It's to help us inform for the future with full VTRAX. So at that point, we will turn this over to our speakers who are representing three of the four VPOP grantees. So it's Claudia Algiluz from California, Maribel Chavez-Torres from Chicago, and Nicole Ortiz from Colorado. And we also have our CDC field assignee to Colorado, Chris Duggar, who's also available to support in those questions. So as part of that session, we will ask pointed questions directly to those grantees. They'll share their responses. And at that point, then we will open the floor to all of you who may have questions as well. So without any further ado, we will turn this over to Brad Prescott to provide the CDC perspective.
Thank you, Julie, and good morning. Troopers here that are sticking around for the last real session of the day, or of the conference itself. Well, for those of you who may not be familiar with the VTRAX Provider Order Pilot, or VPOP, as Julie had mentioned, wanted to give you a little bit of background on why we did this and what it's all about. And VPOP is CDC's effort to test a critical part of VTRAX, the ability for providers to place orders online. There were four grantees and their selected providers that were involved in VPOP, and as was mentioned, three of those are represented here. Massachusetts was the fourth pilot, and unfortunately, Robert Morrison, who was supposed to be up here with us today, was not able to attend. But one of the main reasons that we wanted to do this was so we could get the provider community engaged in this process, because historically we've dealt primarily with grantees, and now for the first time, providers will be able to order online. And we also wanted to capture feedback from those participants and be able to apply the lessons learned to full VTRAX development. Just a little bit about how VPOP fits in with VTRAX and the first part of VTRAX, which will be the VTRAX pilot. As you can see here, there are the four grantees and selected providers, and VPOP does not involve EXIS, which is External Information Systems, or more commonly known as immunization registries. So we could not have any grantees involved in the pilot that had a registry for ordering vaccines. But in the VTRAX pilot and full VTRAX, that will be covered. In VPOP, the grantees still had to use VACMAN as the way to place the orders. VACMAN is an ordering system at CDC that where the orders flow through and go to the distributor. As far as information exchange, for VPOP, it was very limited to order confirmation only, whereas when we move to full VTRAX, there will be the ability to check the order status at any point throughout the transition from ordering to shipment. And one big difference with VPOP was the grantees themselves did not have access to the screens that the providers saw. So this was the primary function of VPOP, was to test the vaccine ordering piece of this. Just a little bit on the statistics. As you can see, the dates that each went live, we had a staggered go live for the various grantees, and Massachusetts had 42 users in the system, California 80, Chicago 34, and Colorado 272. So more than 400 providers or users participated in placing orders in the system. And since May 20th, when the first order went into the system, there have been over 1,200 orders placed through the VTRAX ordering functionality. Now, one of the things that we did as part of the pilot was a formal evaluation where we sent out five different evaluations to the providers themselves and two or three to the grantees. And we had different themes that we ask every month, from the help desk, how well did that support you, to how easy was it to enroll providers in the system and go through the identity proofing process and things like that. We also had other questions that we asked every month so that we could look at the results over time and see if there was any increase or decrease in the satisfaction level. So what I'm going to share with you now is some of the results that we found. And this first slide has to do with the providers themselves. And we asked the question, overall, is VTRAX easy to use? And the first time we asked this question, the response was 62%. In either agreed or strongly agreed. And when we did this, asked the same question in October, that had increased to 76%. Also with the providers, we asked if this system was a satisfactory replacement for any existing ordering methods that they were using. And this also increased from in the 60% range in June when we first did the survey to 71% by October. For the grantees, asking them the same questions, rose from 70% in June to 80% in August as far as were they satisfied, or were their providers satisfied with VTRAX. And then in June when we asked if this was a satisfactory replacement, only 14% of the grantees that had responded to this said, and it could have been more than one representative from the grantees participating, 14% said yes it was, and some of that was because, like I mentioned earlier, they didn't have access to the same screen, so they were going to have to rely on the word of their providers. But by August, there was 100% agreement. Now to some of the results that were not as positive. One has to do with ID proofing, and ID proofing is the process that we go through and you go through to make sure that the person placing the order in the system is actually that person. That's done for a couple of reasons. One, because the orders in VTRAX will be flowing through CDC, and there's other information at CDC that confidential information that you wouldn't want others to be able to access, and also you wouldn't want anybody at the provider level getting in and ordering a bunch of doses and having it shipped to their garage or something like that. Not that there's a big black market out there for MMR vaccine, but you never know. When we ask if the ID proofing process was easy to use, only 49% of the respondents had said that it was. And if you compare this to some of the earlier slides, for example, where you see down in the right-hand part of this, the disagree or strongly disagree was a very low percentage. When we go to this question, 31% disagreed or strongly disagreed, and 21% were right in the middle. So this immediately jumped out to us that this was a major problem, something that we had to make some changes on before we released full VTRAX. Also, we ask, how long did it take the provider to go through the proofing process? And even though 39 of the folks surveyed said that it took them 1 to 5 days, there were 23 others where it took 6 to 15 business days. And, you know, that is not going to get the job done for any of us. So we will be talking more about the ID proofing process. That's one of the questions that the panel will be discussing as to their experiences, and then we'll have some information on how we have changed that process. And just to give you a little bit of background on what we did for ID proofing for VPOP, there were two different ways that a provider could be proofed. One would be that a federal employee, so many states have federal employees assigned to their staff, that person, just because they are a CDC employee, would already be ID proofed, and they could in turn proof the identity of those users. The other method was using a notary, and even though there are notaries located around most cities and states throughout the country, it's not always easy for a provider to pick up and leave their station to go find that notary to get this, to get the paperwork notarized, just to get in the system to place an order. So another advantage that we had, and I know there's a lot of information on this screen, I'll just cover it briefly. Through the feedback process of having calls every month with the providers and also the grantees, and on the surveys themselves, we asked the question about what needs to be changed. And there were some major changes that were made to the functionality as we went through VPOP, and these are things that will be built in to VTracks and will not be a problem. For example, the first one, as with most systems, there's a timeout feature where if there's any inactivity, the system will go ahead and kick you out. Well, it was too short a period of time built into the system initially, and some providers were getting kicked out of the system before they had a chance to enter all the information that they needed to enter and place the order. Also, just some things like the second one, accountability page column headers, it was just some of the usability of the screen. Having the titles frozen across the top didn't always occur, and so that when you scrolled across the page, you had to scroll back to see which column or which row you were in, so all of that was changed. Also, as part of VPOP, grantees could have their providers submit any accountability data, such as doses administered or inventory, and if people were ordering at various times, like quarterly instead of monthly, the grantee may ask them to submit that accountability data on a more frequent basis, and we had to make some changes to the system to allow that paperwork to go in without an order being placed. Modified the way temporary address changes were made in the system, and a lot of that had to do with the interface with VACMAN as well. Since VACMAN was still the entry place for that order, there had to be some coordination that we had to work out. So what did we learn? Well, as I mentioned, identity proofing was the biggest lesson learned that we had. If it was as difficult as it was and as challenging for four grantees and their providers, can you imagine when we start talking about 100,000 possible users, how burdensome that system could be? We also learned that we do need to engage the immunization programs early in the process of development so that we can review the different processes and make sure that they understand the changes and provide us feedback for further changes. Communication with anything is always key. And we developed a bunch of different tools for the grantees to help their providers become familiar with the system and know what was going on. And that's something that we need to definitely repeat for VTracks. Also, it becomes a very difficult juggling act with trying to find the right time to implement a system like this, because there are so many different times of the year that are busy for various reasons: flu season, back to school, H1N1, which took everybody's time. And oftentimes there's not that perfect time to do it, but we definitely realize that that is something that we have to take into consideration. And also here, including those end users in the testing whenever possible. I think that is key to figuring out what works and what does not work, and making sure that it is workable as we move forward. So that is the last slide I have. We will now launch into the panel discussion itself, and I will turn this back over to Julie. As she mentioned, she will present some specific questions to each one of the panel members, and then we will open it up for Q&A from you afterwards. Thanks.
Okay, so now to hear from your peers, what we are going to do is have a series of topic areas, and each one of our panel members will address a few questions around the same topic. And what we also are requesting is that our panel members talk about how they handle the situation in VPOP and how that may help inform them in their planning for full VTRAC. So to make that connection would be really helpful. So our first set of questions is for California, and the topic area is on the provider selection process. So our questions for Claudia are, what process did you go through to select providers for VPOP? What specific requirements were you looking for in a VPOP provider? And were the providers you selected required to participate in VPOP, or was this voluntary?
Thank you, Julie. In California, we actually strategically selected our sites based on several criteria, one being actually our relationship with provider sites, their previous involvement in previous phases of VIMBIT, particularly the implementation phase of centralized distribution, as well as communication with these sites. So based on this criteria, we actually focused our efforts on public sites, more specifically our local health departments, because we have really good working relationships with immunization coordinators within each local health department. They were actually a key stakeholder in the process of transitioning to centralized distribution, so we felt that it was just a normal transition to involve them in the second phase and really give them a first-hand look and feel at centralized online ordering. We do have good modes of communication with this group, routine email communications, teleconference calls, as well as an in-person annual immunization coordinators meetings that we could really capitalize on. And I could tell you, we can always count with this group to provide honest, forthcoming, critical, upfront feedback, which we thought it was a must in participation with this program. In terms of what specific requirements we had, we just basically asked each local health department to select one clinic that could actually really, you know, have hands-on in the system and provide us with feedback. We really did not select private providers at the time. And participation, was it required or was it voluntary? Well, it started as voluntary participation, and it eventually transitioned to require participation. And the reason for this was that because we noticed that a lot of sites that actually had volunteer or actually were volunteered to participate were continuously faxing their vaccine request. So one of the things that we did is we looked at the process, you know, where were they in the process of proofing and training. And so if sites were still not proof, then what we did is we highly encouraged them to complete the proofing process and assisted them in the process and process their order manually. However, if we noticed that multiple times they had already been trained and proofed, after several grace fax order chances, we actually did require them to submit their order electronically, because the whole point of the pilot was for them to experience it. So we really worked with them. At no point we didn't we kept them without vaccines, but we really worked in them in stressing the importance of them using the system so that they can experience it.
Okay, thank you, Claudia. Yes, Chuck. Okay, thank you. Okay, the next set of questions is for Chicago, for Maribel, and this is around end-user testing. And one, I would say, disclaimer on our part, on the CDC side, is we had technical troubles when we were trying to roll out end-user testing, so hands-on was very difficult to achieve. For the pilot grantees that had a CDC field staff with a key fob, there was a way to get in and do that. For the grantees that didn't have it, webinars was the way that we used, and that was a lesson learned, definitely an issue that won't be repeated with full VTRACs. So these questions around end-user testing for Maribel: what is meant by end-user testing, and who participated in the process? What value did you or your providers get from the testing? And do you think the level of testing was adequate, or do you think you should have tested more or less?
End-user testing was an exercise that provided providers and grantees the opportunity to remotely view online the VPOP system. Like Julie mentioned, it was through webinar, and it gave the pilots the opportunity to look at the system and walk through different scenarios. We were fortunate enough, that we have our providers in close proximity, so we were able to bring providers to actually do a live demo on the system, which was actually very beneficial for us. They provided great feedback, and it gave them the opportunity to really look at this at the system and feel comfortable with the system. One of the probably challenges that we encounter, but it also provided information for us for future rollout training for VTRACs, is some of these providers actually were coming in at different computer proficiency level. We actually had providers who simple commands, they could not, navigate the system. So that's something that we're actually going to incorporate in future VTRACs training. It's probably have different types of level trainings for the providers. Our staff tested the system as well on the grantee activities. Again, CDC developed scenarios for us, and we went through all the different modules, and we provided comprehensive feedback to CDC. Was it valuable? Again, I think it was valuable because the providers that we brought in felt that they were part of the process since the beginning. They were kept in the loop. Some of those same providers that participated in our hands-on were actually part of the provider advisory committee as well. Did we test enough? We did have some challenges with the CDC system, and hopefully in the future we can eliminate those issues. But I think if you have the ability to test and bring in your providers, I would highly recommend it. But for Chicago, I think the key thing that came out of the live testing is the different levels of computer proficiency among our providers.
Okay, thank you, Maribel. Next set of questions is for Chicago. For Colorado, and intentionally for Colorado, and it was around rolling on additional providers. You may have noticed in Brad's slides that Colorado really went the extra mile to aggressively roll this pilot out to as many providers as possible, currently with 272 users. So our questions for Nicole and Chris are, why did you decide to add additional providers after VPOP was in use? And what efficiencies or issues have you experienced by adding additional providers?
Thanks, Julie. Good morning, everyone. Colorado had three reasons why we decided to add on additional providers to VPOP. We wanted to make the transition to full VTRACs easier for our providers. We wanted to have as many providers through the ID proofing process as possible because of the time involved. And we targeted our public health providers and our tier one and two providers to gauge the ability of the VPOP system and how our office would process those electronic orders. The efficiencies that we experienced with adding additional providers is because we added so many provider sites on, it cut down dramatically our manual data entry, which was very efficient for our program, and we feel that this will help the transition run smoothly to full VTRACs. The main issues we encountered, we still have our individual users struggling to get through the ID proofing process. It's very time consuming. And the other major issue we had was reviewing those online orders. We have created an access database that helps us manipulate those orders and push them through the system a lot faster.
Okay, thank you, Nicole. We have a few more questions, and we're just going to open it for our panel members to chime in. Instead of calling each of the three of you out, if you could just chime in, and that way we'll still have adequate time for the larger audience to ask pointed questions. Okay, so the topic of transition to VTRACS. How has participation in VPOP prepared you for transition to full VTRACS? And please be sure to move the microphone up to each of you. Volunteers.
With, you know, participation in the VPOP pilot has provided us with a lot of information. You get a lot of assistance from CDC, so that actually has been a plus. They assisted with provider communication, materials, and again, with our providers, those 26 providers that are regular participants in online ordering has been very key, you know, for us. Also, it has identified issues that we have to address when we roll out VTRACS and how we roll out VTRACS to the providers. We were probably not as aggressive as probably California and Colorado in regards to working with some of those providers that continuously, you know, sent the their order via fax. Even though we would, you know, call them up and say, this is the last time we're going to process your order via fax, you have to go on the system. That's something that we're going to definitely work for VTRACS and make sure that we enforce that piece.
I think for us, it really helped us in really understand the process and the efforts that it will take for us to roll a large number of providers into VTRACS. It really has given us an insight on the providers' comfort levels and familiarity in using a online system. It really has highlighted the training efforts that we will have to put in place because we will not be able to conduct an in-person training like we did with this initial group. So training has to be adequate time, materials have to be straightforward and very clear so that we can get our providers very comfortable and confident in using the system, and they will move away from that easy fax, you know, faxing order. So we want to make sure that they're incentivized for that. Communications. I cannot stress that because we had to repeat the message different times. And I think really realizing the importance of our field staff in assisting our local health departments in the proofing process, answering questions, and really getting feedback from the sites was actually very key. And, you know, it's been mentioned, and I think just stressing the fact that ID proofing has to be simple and it has not been, it really shouldn't be a barrier for providers to really gain access to a really, really good system for them.
For Colorado, I think because we had trained over 300 plus users from over 200 provider sites, we were able to learn our enrollment lessons in advance. So I think that transitioning us to full VTRACS, because of those lessons, it will be easier for Colorado, and most of our providers will already be participating. So the issues of the ID proofing, the time it takes to ID proof someone, to get a provider through that process, we have shortened our deadline time frames so those providers could meet those deadlines and we can get them through the process a lot simpler.
Okay, thank you. Next question is around provider communication, and we'll bridge it with training as well. So what types of materials were used to communicate to providers in order to help them get ready for using VTRACS? How often did you communicate with your providers? And then on training, what was the process you used to train your providers? And will you use the same approach when training your remaining providers?
Well, I guess I can tackle the first one. We really just used CDC provided materials. I mean, they were great. They were, you know, simple. So we share the training presentations, resource guides, frequently asked questions with providers. We utilized emails to communicate providers the process and communicating all of the different steps in ID proofing.
Chicago went live in mid-June. So what we did is we actually informed all of our providers about VTRACS or VPOD during our VFC regional meetings. We host annual VFC regionals, 4 to 5 meetings throughout the city, and we make providers, or we mandate providers, attend the meeting. From that point on, we were communicating regularly with the providers about VTRACS. We utilize CDC communication messages. And then also during that meeting, we were able to sign up volunteers for the pilot.
Colorado used CDC's training module as well. However, we did tailor it for Colorado users. In addition, we used webinars, group trainings that included the live demo on CDC's website.
Okay, and then everyone's favorite topic, ID proofing. So we're going to ask a couple questions of our panel, and then Brad is going to close it with the CDC side. What enhancements have been made to improve the ID proofing process? So the question for our panel is, what challenges related to the ID proofing process directly affected you and your providers, and how did you explain ID proofing to your providers?
For Chicago, I think the main challenge for our providers was the delay in them probably following up with the emails that CDC sent them. Again, our providers are in close proximity, so what we did when we identified all our volunteers, we had multiple trainings for those providers, and during that training, we actually did identity proofing, because we have a federal staff assigned to Chicago, so the providers did not have to go to a notary to get that documentation notarized. We did it on site during the training. We submitted the paperwork to CDC, but I think providers either don't visit their email very frequently. It was going to their junk mail, so we would get calls from providers, 2-3 weeks after the information was submitted to CDC, wondering, where I'm still waiting for communication from CDC, it hasn't arrived. So that was, for us, probably the biggest challenge. What we told providers that identity proofing was, we wanted to verify who you are, and make sure that who you state that you are, it's actually you, because you are actually using a federal system, and other information flows through CDC. And it was not so much actually our providers who had an issue with identity proofing. It was probably more our staff that felt awkward asking providers, as we rolled in some new providers, to actually show their state issued government ID.
So California actually used a similar system for initial proofing. I think we took advantage of our annual immunization coordinators, that we had everybody there to collect all of the paperwork. I think it was challenging for the provider in terms of distinguishing the different types of email, the proofing email versus the registration emails. And we had a couple of sites ask who Sam was, because they were receiving emails from Sam. But I think it was a very challenging challenging for them because they thought that they would answer one set of emails, and that was for ID proofing, but then they tended to ignore the registration emails, and like Mirabel, you know, they were calling and asking where they were in the process. We actually did have a couple local health departments that actually felt really uncomfortable in sharing personal information, and that was an eye-opening experience for us because, like I said, we have really good working relationships and close working relationships with them. So in the private sector, we thought that was, you know, going to definitely be a challenge. And we explained proofing the same way, you know, it was just a simple step to gain access to the system, get a user ID, and really determine the identity of the person and verify that, you know, they were in fact submitting an order for that particular local health department.
In Colorado, we included the ID proofing explanation in the webinars. But our great story was our first cohort, we brought on all the public health, all the counties and FQHCs, and they were they did it pretty fast in the summertime, and a lot of them had direct access to notary in their organizations. It was our second cohort where we brought on our tier one, tier two private providers that were a little bit less easy to get through the ID proofing. And our mistake, one of our lessons learned, as Nicole mentioned, was we gave them about 4 months to get it done. So we finished the training in September and said, by February 1st, you should be ordering online. Your faxes will be refused. Well, that was flu season. So starting in February, we had an enforcer standing by the fax machine with a list of people who should be ordering online, stamping them, deny, deny, deny. And that's when the calls started coming in. And people were like, you know, what? I haven't done this yet. Let me get this one fax in. I promise I'll do it next month. And by then, just so much had changed, and the training has sort of left everybody's brain, and there's a certain amount of exhaustion out there that we said the next time we bring people on, we're going to say, get it done in 2 weeks, because we obviously left that window open for too long, and it caused a big problem for us in February and March.
And I just want to add another thing to that point that Chris just made, was the 30 days. After 30 days, the registration invitation does expire, so that was another huge issue for us. Providers who didn't do it, we had to start all over with the help desk saying, can you please re-invite this person to register?
That mysterious SAM that Claudia was referring to is CDC's Secure Access Management Services System, which is the system that processes the paperwork as it comes in, sends out the invitations to enroll as a provider, and provides the confirmation. So you'll be seeing messages from SAM as well. Wanted to give you a little update. Actually, it's a big update because we just received some confirmation this morning on kind of a culmination of some work we've been doing to streamline the ID proofing process. When this whole process started, it was even more cumbersome than what is being described here. There are federal regulations that dictate different security levels for different types of users that have access to CDC systems. And initially, all grantees and providers would have had to submit a driver's license and a credit card to prove who they were. We were able to talk them down to the system that we talked about, which still involved a driver's license and faxing that in and finding a notary if you didn't have a designated proofer in your organization or close to that provider. But we did just find out that, and I think this is great news, that we'll be able to take advantage of the existing trusted relationships that CDC has with the grantees and that grantees have with their providers through the VFC program. As you enroll providers into the VFC program, there is a process that you go through that verifies that they are a licensed physician, that they're not on the blacklist, so to speak, because of fraud or any other bad things. And you also, by VFC requirements, make a site visit to those folks initially and then subsequently every year or every few years. So the CDC security people have deemed that as acceptable as proof of who that provider is and that you as the grantee are comfortable that they are who they are. So what would happen with your providers is you would submit a list of those providers to SAMS, and that there would not have to be any other paperwork associated with that. SAMS system then generates the enrollment forms and the other paperwork that the providers would fill out and submit back in to become an authorized user. As far as the staff at the provider's offices, it's also been determined that the best people to verify that the identity of those users who are ordering vaccine on behalf of that trusted provider is that provider themselves. So the provider's office will be responsible for making sure that they are comfortable that whoever they deem to order on their behalf is who they say they are. They will then turn around, submit that information to the grantee, and the grantee, just like they did for the provider themselves, would submit that list of users to the SAMS system, and once again, the paperwork goes out for them to complete and send back in. So no driver's license, no credit card, no notary, none of that will be required as we move forward.